Hey everyone, I'm Swati Rawat and welcome to the Visionary Podcast, where I talk to visionary Indian women with inspiring, intriguing and aspirational stories. In April 2020, when we were all seeing a surge in COVID-19 cases around the world, I invited Dr. Poonima Bajwa, a resident physician at UC Davis Medical Center in California, on the show to get an expert's opinion on this novel coronavirus and understand what healthcare experts were witnessing on the ground. Dr. Bajwa spoke at length about dealing with this crisis and the precautions undertaken by her and her colleagues at the hospital. Unfortunately, towards the end of 2020, she herself contracted COVID-19 and her experience of dealing with this virus was nothing like she expected. So I invited her again to Visionary, and in this episode, she shares everything that transpired since we last spoke. Her encounter with COVID, residual effects of this virus, her experience taking the vaccine shot, and reasons why we should trust the vaccine.
So I believe the last time we spoke was March or April, and we were just talking about how it's almost been a year since we last spoke, and COVID was still sort of new at that time. And there was a lot of conversations about how different officials were going to handle, PPE and all that.
Yeah.
And our treatment protocols were still being developed at that time. And then I think in the middle of the year, there was a little bit of a lull where folks had accepted what COVID is, and people were masking and things were sort of more open. And a similar thing happened in my life as well. You know, initially there was kind of a lockdown even with our patient visits. So we were doing video visits only in the beginning of COVID, and then we had opened up because we had seen, okay, we know COVID is around, but we still have to treat our patients. So I was going to work, you know, masking. At one point I was now wearing a face shield and only wearing scrubs at work. So there was a sense of some normalcy that had transpired. Couple of months after that is where we are now, where there's more of a surge and back to lockdowns. I mean, between the last time we spoke, there's been probably a few lockdowns, even in the hospital. I haven't had a chance to see my parents as often as I'd like. My husband has been working from home the entire time. So his life is fairly unchanged.
And Poonima, during all this time, you did contract COVID yourself, right? When did that happen? And when was the first time that you realized that you started developing the symptoms?
So I had been treating COVID since, I'd say sparingly, in the last couple of months. And you'd say, okay, maybe there's one COVID patient on your team, and we would decide to split between the doctors, like who to really minimize everyone's exposure. So we had been doing fairly well with that, and I was in the ICU again in late October, early November of this year, of last year. I'm glad to see that. And and we were seeing a lot of a little bit more patients than normal, I'd say, at that time. So there was something was brewing, and a lot of younger patients, unfortunately. So I was in the ICU, you know, following all of our protocols, and it was also the election time here, and it was a very politically tense moment. So everyone was on high alert, and I remember that one of my friends and coworkers were sick. And we were, we were treating a lot more COVID patients comparatively at that point. So I remember coming back home one day, and that was the day that the election had concluded, and we had all sort of gotten a breather. And I got a text message from my coworker saying that they had tested positive. And it was, you know, the end of the shift. I had just come home. I was looking forward to spending some time with my husband. And I immediately quarantined myself because we, you know, as best as we try as healthcare workers to isolate ourselves, we know that we follow protocol well when we are in a patient's room with COVID. But amongst one another, when somebody's asymptomatic, you know, we do have lectures together where we eat together. And So in that moment, I was very hopeful and I thought, okay, perhaps I don't have it.
Yeah.
And or like, you know, the rest of the world, when you, if you haven't had COVID, there's just like this assumption that I'm going to be fine. I probably will be the asymptomatic one. I don't know what it is. It just, it makes you feel better to think that way.
Yeah.
You think about the protective factors you have. Are you young? Are you healthier? You don't have high blood pressure, some of the other risk factors. And so you like console yourself. And that's what I was doing that night.
Mm-hmm.
The next day I started feeling a little dizzy and I've never felt dizzy in my life. So that was, it's an interesting thing to have as a young person. I got tested and unfortunately I was positive. So that was early November for me.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that because you were going in and out of the ICU so many times and because you were at the hospital, I mean, that's your workplace, were you sort of already expecting that? So even when you contracted COVID, were you already in the mindset that, okay, I know how to deal with this, these are the protocols, da-da-da, ABC, and I'll be okay? Or like, did you have those protocols and but what your actually experience was far more worse?
That's exactly what was going through my mind, Swati. I think there is a blessing in disguise to experiencing COVID at the end of 2020, because at that point we've sort of learned how to deal with COVID as best as we can.
Yeah.
So, and you know, minimizing exposure as best as you can, and being in the hospital, I really did expect myself to get COVID at some point. It was very close to the vaccine. That's a different story. But it's almost seemed unavoidable for me to not get COVID because I was constantly in the face of COVID.
And Poornima, I just want to go a little bit deeper into your experience dealing with COVID and something like this and get a first person's sort of point of view, who's also a doctor, into understanding what exactly happened. So what were some of the symptoms that you had, the early symptoms and some of the symptoms that you developed later on? And how was that experience altogether?
We're going to a painful place, Swati.
Let me know if we have to stop at any place, just let me know.
Oh, no problem. I initially started with just the dizziness and nausea. And, you know, dizziness and nausea, very, very non-specific symptoms, you know, and not necessarily associated with COVID. I also felt like maybe I would have had a fever. You know, that sensation that you have that perhaps you have a fever, and I'd check my temperature and I'd be normal. So I felt like something was off. And I waited, you know, those that time frame between your first symptom and when you actually test positive is quite painful too. Again, you know, knowing perhaps the extent of what COVID can do to a to any individual, there is a little bit of fear that I did have.
Yeah.
And again, praying that I be negative. And I remember calling my parents on the way to getting myself swabbed, which is never a pleasant experience. And this is probably, I don't know how many times I've gotten swabbed at this point. But I, you know, I don't know what it was about this time. I knew I had a closer exposure. I knew we had more COVID patients, that I called my parents from my car speakerphone while I was getting swabbed. Because I just needed them to sort of be there. And, you know, regardless of whether I had COVID, I couldn't see my parents. And they prayed. I had a fairly painless swab this time. So that was the one blessing.
Or maybe your senses were numbed after like getting swabbed for like a time.
That's probably what happened. Yeah. And I remember driving back home and just waiting for the results. And the next day when I realized I saw the results on my I had gotten a message from my doctor saying I was positive and I should quarantine, and then a flurry of like phone calls started. It's like people within the healthcare system, you know, public health, the Sac County, my bosses, everyone wants to talk to you when you have COVID. Like, okay, now you have COVID. Now you got to stay in your house. And in that moment, I was still coming to terms with the fact that I had COVID.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God, here it is. This is the moment I was so afraid of. And I can't stop. People can't stop calling me. I want to just rest.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of it all.
Yeah. And even I believe, how long has it been that we are now that we're talking? How long has it been since you were first exposed and you were first tested?
It's been about a month and a half, Swati.
Okay. And how is your post-COVID experience, Purnima? Like, do you experience any residual effect?
Absolutely. Actually, before we go there, probably what caused my post-COVID effects is how my COVID journey was, which was also not very usual, I want to say.
Okay.
So Swati, by the time I got COVID, I had known maybe 50 or 60% of my friends in medicine have already gotten COVID. So my residency program had learned, in a way, you know, how do our residents fare in terms of COVID.
Yeah.
Are they doing well? Are they back in 10 days? Are they back in 20 days? Back to work? Because, you know, we are sort of important in this time frame. We have to return to work and get back to helping people.
Yeah.
So there was a sense of normalcy about getting COVID by the time I got COVID, and which is why my experience was so strange. I hadn't heard of many of my friends even requiring much hospital help during their unfortunate infections. But I'd say day six onwards, about day five or so of symptoms, I really wasn't doing that poorly. I was quarantining, I was watching a bunch of shows, you know, I was eating a lot. Yeah. I had lost my sense of taste and smell a touch, and then I regained it. So I panicked a little bit when I lost my sense of taste and smell. And so I was like, okay, let me eat all my favorite foods in case this is gone for a while. And then day six, I started feeling short of breath. And I have mild asthma. I'd probably say moderate even. But I don't think that shortness of breath is comparable to even a normal asthma exacerbation. And then a couple hours later, I started having chest pain. I was in contact with my pulmonologist this entire time. And so we started steroids at that moment and a blood thinner.
Oh.
So, you know, just expecting myself to be back to my normal state at day 11, that was an indication that things were probably not going the right way. I woke up one of the multiple nights, actually, with chest pain and shortness of breath. And I noticed that it was getting harder for me to even walk to the bathroom. And me and my husband isolated really well in that he would leave me food outside my door, and I'd grab it when he was away. And he had started doing this thing where he, you know, we would FaceTime a lot. Because I really missed my husband during isolation. And he would peek at me from across the living room to have enough distance. And he started saying, "What's going on with you? Like, you just a day ago you were fine, and now you're barely able to like hold your tray up and walk to the room." And so I started noticing that a little bit more too. One of the nights, like I said, I woke up with really bad chest pain, and I really thought I needed to go to the emergency department. But, you know, I tried to distance my doctor brain from my patient brain, which is very hard to do. And I thought, okay, if I have to go to the hospital, I'm COVID positive. The hospital was not full at that time, but it wasn't empty either. And I wanted to really minimize my exposure to any other folks at the hospital. So I called the advice nurse at like 2 or 3 a.m. whenever I woke up. And off the bat, she said, "Well, you're having a really hard time breathing." And I couldn't even talk on the phone. And she said, "Please call an ambulance." And I, you know, in that moment, I just thought, okay, but maybe I should just drive myself, because I want to have ambulances available to other to my patients. I just had this idea that I you know, why I don't necessarily need it, was my thought. And she tried to convince me of that. So I talked to my husband, and he actually decided to drive me, because I don't know, there's this this strange thing that probably healthcare workers have, in that we feel like we don't deserve all these amenities that healthcare offers, or we don't want to keep them from other patients. So I thought that was an interesting thing that came out. He wore an N95 and drove me. And I mean, that was, I don't know, I think about that often, in that I potentially could have exposed him. And I obviously also wore an N95. And going to the hospital as a physician, to the hospital that you work at, is, it's, yeah. It's a bizarre experience, very humbling. So I went to the hospital a couple of times, and I have to say, Swathi, I've learned a huge lesson in empathy in patients. And it is probably going to change the way I practice medicine. The fears that patients have when you're in that situation, when you've seen something that's so politicized, that's all over the news, that patients have died all over the world from, and you're in that spot and you feel so helpless, and you go to the emergency department waiting for mercy from, I don't know, doctors, nurses, God, even. It's a very humbling experience. So I will never make my patients feel like they're overutilizing resources. You asked me about the post-COVID symptoms.
No, but let's keep talking about this. I mean, we can.
Okay, sure.
Because I do want to know, like, how long were you there in the hospital, and how long did it take for you to recover and come back and be back home and be a bit more, you know, functioning in that way?
So I went to the hospital the first time. I stayed there for a couple of hours, I want to say. I don't, you know, the strange thing is, there was so much sleeplessness during this isolation period, because once I started getting short of breath, I couldn't sleep, because, you know, you just, you feel like you're panicking. Yeah. The good news is that my oxygen didn't drop too low. So they had offered me hospital admission. And I, you know, being a physician, I thought, okay, well, I don't actually need oxygen right now, so I'll go home and come back if I need to. Then I did come back. Thankfully, that time also I did fine. And because my doctor was in such close contact with me, and I understand that a lot of people may not have that option. So if I was not in medicine, and if I didn't know what COVID can do, perhaps I would have accepted that admission. But my pulmonologist, who I love so dearly, he was texting me and calling me 3 times a day since this whole thing started, 3 times a day, checking in on me. And if I missed a message, he would text me again. He would text me again, you know? So I really felt like somebody was in my corner. And one of the times I was in the emergency department, I was actually, it's very interesting that this thing happened. I was just reflecting on how strange it was to be in the hospital as a physician. A lot of folks didn't recognize me because I was not wearing scrubs and I wasn't wearing my badge. And I was sitting next to, in one of the occasions, I wasn't feeling that sick. So I was actually told to wait in the waiting room, which is rare for COVID patients.
Yeah.
They saw that my vital signs looked okay, so I was waiting there. And I remember sitting next to one of my own patients, and it was a very strange experience. Yes. And this patient is elderly, and so I immediately distanced myself from them. And I was so short of breath, I couldn't even have a conversation. But in that moment, I just kept thinking, oh my God, this patient can't get COVID. They're elderly, and I knew their medical history. And so I immediately I picked myself up and I like moved myself away from that patient. So a very, very humbling experience overall. Even the last few days of isolation, I was just so tired of feeling sick. And I tried to, you know, I'll be honest, I tried to pray.
Yeah.
I tried to talk to my family, but I was getting to a point where eating was taxing. So I'd have maybe 10 minutes in a day that I could potentially speak. So I'd split it up into voice notes to like two friends, one for parents, and then one for my husband. And my husband would just have me on FaceTime and we wouldn't speak. He'd just watch me. And it was a very painful time. Basically, all of my activities of daily living were out of my reach. I'd have to ration my energy, so to speak, to go to the restroom.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. That sounds horrible. Mm-hmm. How long did it all go, Dr. Bajwa?
I'd say it probably took me a couple of weeks to be able to do the things a human can do when they're not that sick in the house. Mm. Okay. Mm. So I came out of isolation day 16, and I literally, I felt like I had been hit by a truck. You know, you hear these things that patients say to you about COVID. And I always thought every experience is subjective, right? But to go through that exact emotion that somebody has expressed to you in the past, many of my patients have said these words to me. I was breathing like I was gasping for air. Mm-hmm. I felt like I had been hit by a truck. I couldn't taste or smell anything. I couldn't even get out of bed. And you know, you feel bad for this person. And you're like, how do I help you? I want to help this patient feel normal again. But when you go through that yourself, it's very strange. I texted my pulmonologist and my primary care doctor probably incessantly with these very similar phrases. So I'd experience it all. I actually thought you'll enjoy this. I remember coming out of quarantine day 16, which is actually kind of late for coming out of isolation. I mean, to my husband. So I outside of my own room. And, you know, I'm like hauling myself out of the room, barely holding onto the walls and holding onto this other wall and like struggling to walk out. And I sit on my couch and I just felt like I had made it in life. I was looking at my TV and I thought this moment, this, you know, there was a time back in March where I would sit on this couch and look at this TV and say, it's so hard to sit here. It's so hard to sit here and watch TV. You know, back when the whole quarantine started, I was like thinking, wow, can you really get too much TV? Can you really get too much rest? And in that moment, this was the epitome of my like desires. Like, wow, I made it to the couch. I can watch TV with my husband. I was so excited. And let me tell you my husband's reaction. Looking at somebody who couldn't even get to the bathroom. And I probably had a lot of body odor at this time.
Yeah.
But he looked at me and he held my cheek after so long and he said, "You're so beautiful."
Oh.
And I was like, wow, he really loves me. That was a special moment for us.
Yeah. You know, if I'm going to edit out a trailer for this recording, that's going to be the part.
It was a very, very, I have to say, it was like the romance of 2020 was in that moment for me. Or perhaps it's a newlywed charm.
could be.
Yeah.
Dr. Bajwa, tell me, how has your post-COVID experience been so far? And what are some of the residual effects that you faced after those couple of weeks and that you're still facing now?
Mm-hmm. So I'd say I probably did not have a mild COVID experience to start with, and that there's some data that sometimes mildly ill patients can have very long and lingering effects. I tried to think about why I had such lingering effects too. I mean, I took steroids, I was on a blood thinner, I wasn't moving a lot, obviously. So perhaps I've tried to reason with myself, but I, like I said, came out of quarantine day 16 or so. For the next 2-3 weeks, it's been very, very slow progress in terms of fatigue.
Okay.
So I'd say I probably went from 10 minutes of talking per day while I was in isolation to maybe 20 to 30. I now could frequent the bathroom a little bit more. I didn't have to think about, oh, I have to go and get some coffee. Can I do that right now? It was as though I had to question every movement. And I had a lot of body aches to some chills for weeks, really. And every now and then, even I'd say even the last 3-4 days, I've had some chills. I've had a lot of fatigue. I go to physical therapy now for deconditioning and to gain some of the strength back.
Yeah.
And to really also get a sense of normalcy in my life.
Yeah.
It's been a long haul. And the more I've felt these symptoms, the more I've looked into it, there's a lot of patients out there who are experiencing what we call long hauler symptoms for 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. There's also something called chronic fatigue syndrome that a lot of we've learned about chronic fatigue from exposure to viruses. So mononucleosis can cause chronic fatigue. It seems like COVID can cause chronic fatigue. And I really feel for these patients, because it feels like COVID just came, right? You beat COVID in a way, but now it's sort of impacts your life still months in. I mean, that's terrible.
Yeah.
I have to say, thankfully, Swathi, I've been on the up for the last few days. Without trying to jinx it, I'm hoping that things will continue to improve. Because there's a little bit of guilt in being a patient. When there's a pandemic going on and you have something to contribute. And so I do some telemedicine. I talk to my patients because I have now more of energy to do that. And I'm trying to contribute, and I'm trying to remember that I'm still helping in some way. If I wasn't a physician, I probably wouldn't have had that guilt.
But Dr. Bajwa, are you still feeling, or are you still suffering from shortness of breath? Or is it just fatigue that is, you know, taking a toll?
I'd say, out of all the symptoms that I had, the ones that have lingered the most are fatigue and shortness of breath. Okay. I had chest pain for a long time, Swathi, and it seems to be nearly gone now, which is very exciting. The shortness of breath is also strange. It's not always exertional. It's not always at a certain time frame. It doesn't feel like an asthma exacerbation. So it's exactly what my patients had told me. I feel like I can't get enough air. I feel like when I lay flat, I can't get enough air. And it often catches you at bizarre times.
So is it linked to, let's just say, any prolonged activity? So if you're doing something, let's just say you're walking for 10 minutes straight, it hits you at that point? Or it's just like if you're just sitting on the chair, it suddenly hits you and you're not able to breathe properly?
Exactly the latter, Swathi. It can come to you when you're exercising. It can also come when you're basically doing nothing. And the funny thing is, I have this habit now because of such a traumatic experience from COVID that I go and check my oxygen. And of course it's fine. And so in that moment, there is a level of, well, I've figured in my personal experience, there's a level of symptoms that don't necessarily mean that you are needing medications or hospitalizations. And that, you know, and I think that for folks like me, I wonder out there if somebody's had a similar experience like mine. I'm sure there are. The key, I would say, is for these lingering symptoms to remember that if you are feeling the shortness of breath and chest pain, that sometimes you have to just work through it. And that, don't let yourself get worked up, because when you're worked up, you also get more chest pain, more shortness of breath, speaking from very personal experience.
I really want to talk to you about vaccine, because I believe you have taken a shot yourself, right?
Absolutely.
So considering the current political environment over here in India and across the globe as well, I just wanted to get your perspective, an expert's perspective, who has also administered a shot to herself, has taken a shot rather, on the fact that how safe are these vaccines, you know, with this so many fake news around so much of the, not just about the how these vaccines are made, but where they, how are they sourced and all of that. Mm-hmm. What, according to you, are some of the top reasons to trust a vaccine and take it? So first, mm-hmm. I want to understand your own personal experience. Did you feel anything after that? Was there any residual effect of that? And the second part I want to understand is, what were some of the top reasons? What are some of the top reasons, according to you, to trust a vaccine?
Absolutely. So I took my vaccine about 2.5 weeks ago. So when this the Pfizer was approved, in the US, and we were allowed to take it, I was in the first wave, and some might say probably a little early for me, okay. because technically I should have had immunity, having had COVID so early. Mm-hmm. But me being paranoid and seeing how 2020 has gone, not really trusting a lot of things, I thought of actually getting the vaccine, expecting and anticipating a dearth of vaccines later. So that's the real reason. And I did not feel anything outside of arm soreness that I can directly relate to the COVID vaccine.
Which is typical of
FA. It's typical,
you know, of any exactly. sort of shot or anything that you inject in your arm, it's going to hurt.
Any bruise.
Yeah.
Right. Including the flu. I mean, the flu vaccine impacts me exactly the same way. Yeah. I know of all of my physician friends got the vaccine at the same time, and none of them had any symptoms, not even a slight fever, no fatigue, no shortness of breath, no chest pain. They all had a little bit of arm pain, and they worked through that. It was gone the next day or the day after. Mm-hmm. So our experience has been overwhelmingly positive, I'd say. And I initially, when I heard about the vaccine, I was still in isolation, and I'd still just gotten COVID. So I felt still a very, I felt very hopeful when I saw that news. I walked to the hall where they were vaccinating physicians and nurses and healthcare staff, everyone who was in the face of COVID. And it was such a beautiful moment. And I remember it was the most steps I'd taken in a long time. And I, took a break and then walked further in the hall, take a break. And everyone was just, you know, you could see their smiles through their masks. The nurses that vaccinated us were so kind. They were actually second in line. So they were technically even exposing themselves to so many new people while vaccinating us. I mean, it was a beautiful moment. I read the clinical trials while I was in isolation to see whether this would be a good choice. And I found that, you know, both the vaccines that are approved now in the US, Pfizer and Moderna, had a very good response. So Pfizer tested 43,000 people. I think Moderna had 30,000 or so. And they have come up with this vaccine, which is an mRNA vaccine, which is technically new to the public, but the technology is not new. So the vaccine itself, I can describe that a little bit, is it's basically mRNA or messenger RNA wrapped in a lipid bubble. That lipid bubble, once you inject it, it goes inside your cell. Your ribosomes inside your cell will then transcribe it into a protein, which then is distributed to the rest of the body. In that, when you are exposed to COVID, eventually your body will say, hey, we recognize this molecule, let's go attack it. So they actually came up with an mRNA vaccine, or they were deciding to I'm not sure what stage this was left off at for Zika virus, but Zika virus didn't last. So the technology isn't technically new. The usage is new. That is the reason why this vaccine came up faster, because mRNA vaccine has been easier to build. The other thing to note is that the efficacy of both of these vaccines has been quite positive. 95 and 97% is great. I understand they have only tested for 1 to 2 months, but that is the need of the hour. We don't have years here. We cannot accept any more deaths. We cannot accept any more lingering fatigue. You know, it's just, it was what was needed. This is emergency use, which is the reason why this is fast. And Swati, I have to say, you asked me about adverse effects. The adverse effects were also fairly minimal in both of these vaccines. I think the ones that were notable, I would say, are still just a fatigue and headache that resolved.
Okay.
So something that is shown to help you prevent COVID, number one. Number two, the adverse effects are minimal. And you get it at a time where basically COVID is everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I went for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dr. Bajwa, is there a, let's just say a time frame? Like, is this a repeated shot? So if I get a shot today, am I supposed to get another one in 6 months?
Yeah. So the ideal time frame is reported in the trials. So you take your first shot and then your second shot should be about 3 weeks after for longer immunity.
Okay. And what is that time frame for the immunity? Like,
Good question.
Is that valid for 6 months, 12 months, or does that depend from like person to person based on, their own, I believe, underlying conditions or anything?
So the trials have only tested folks for 1 to 2 months, right? That is the reason why this vaccine came out so quickly. So we know that is evident for 1 to 2 months at least.
Got it.
Theoretically, it makes sense that it would be longer, but we are still testing that. The other thing to note, Swati, is that when you have COVID, from our earlier data up in early or mid 2020, I'd say, is we've seen that COVID immunity is different between different people. So 2 to 6 months in some, maybe longer, maybe shorter. So with that in mind, it's possible that it may be shorter, but theoretically, when you look at the vaccine, it seems like it would be longer. And we'll learn more as time goes on.
Okay. And Dr. Bajwa, I just want to ask another thing from you, and this is sort of like a personal advice that I want from you. So I know a couple of people around me who are pretty hesitant about the vaccine, because maybe they read something on WhatsApp, maybe they heard something somewhere in their peer groups. And I'm talking about, some uncles and aunts who are a little bit, who are looking at the vaccine with sort of like a grain of salt, but they're like, we shouldn't take the vaccine. Nothing will happen to us. Or something is mixed in these vaccines and it's going to do something to us. What is the, let's just say, the one best argument that you have against not taking this vaccine?
One best argument against not taking this vaccine. As a medical professional, it is easier for me to say than for anybody else that this is something that will work. So I appreciate the fact that people are viewing the vaccine and looking at the pros and cons. That is number one, something that we should appreciate. If your uncles and aunts are looking at the vaccine and saying, does this really work? That is an excellent question.
Yeah.
I would say looking at the data, right? The data can't lie. The data looks good. And that is the reason why I prescribe medications. That is the reason why folks trust doctors, because we follow science. We follow, okay, this is something, we came up with something that works. Let's test it again and again and again. Make sure it works. Make sure the risk and benefit ratio is heavily weighed towards the benefit. And so when I see that in a study, that is all I need. And I understand why people have fears, right? We've heard about all these things. We are living in a society where everything is politicized.
Yeah.
Facts are politicized. But the reality is, Swati, if you look at the data doesn't say, take me, I'm the vaccine. The data says I'm 97% effective. Take me if you want. I have low adverse outcomes. Take me if you want. And I'd say for the folks that are skeptical, we appreciate skepticism, because that tells me that people are using their minds to make decisions. And I will always appreciate that as a physician. When you get a chance, look at the data, look at the folks who have taken the vaccine, ask about experiences. And I invite these folks to have conversations with their physicians too, and have these conversations now, because once the vaccine rolls out, you don't want to miss your spot.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great way to put it. And I believe if FOMO can sort of push people to take these vaccines faster, that would be great.
It would be. I can tell you, everyone in my family is just waiting for their spot. In fact, even amongst clinicians, the folks that work in the ICU, so people like me have always been frontline, right?
Yeah.
But the folks that work in clinic are second, and they've been looking for spots. Like, how can we expedite this? How can we get the people a chance to be immune? And you know, the thing you said earlier, Swathi, where people have this idea that I'll probably be okay, or the mortality is low, or I heard about my friend and he was fine, so I'll probably be fine. Those are all wonderful and protective thoughts. The reality is, do you even want to be like me, where you've had to go to the hospital multiple times in the middle of the night, or you've woken up with chest pain and panicked, or you have been on medications that you probably don't ever want to be on? Is it really worth it? Is it really worth risking your life as a long hauler? I'd say probably not.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Bajwa, I know you have given me so much of your time, and I know you are still recovering from these long haul effects of COVID. So I'm just going to end this conversation with this one last question. And I just want to ask about your prediction for 2021 as a healthcare expert. What do you think are some of the precautions that we should keep following? And what, according to you, is the best hope we have to sort of safeguard ourselves and move forward towards building a new normal for 2021?
Great question, Swathi. I'd say masking is still very important. We've learned over the last couple of months that masking works.
Yeah.
That's something that needs to stay. I would encourage people to, if not take the vaccine, then at least have conversations with healthcare providers and ask them, and be open about your hesitations. It is okay that you've had this idea from Facebook or you read it on a blog. That is understandable, because that's what you believe. And if we can help clarify questions, that would be ideal. Mm. It's probably going to take a couple of months, Swathi, for folks to even get vaccinated. And then their body's going to kick in the immune response. So COVID, you know, 2020 has ended, but COVID is probably here to stay for at least a couple more months. If folks start expediting these conversations and start talking about COVID again, like we did back in March, you know, back when it was new and everyone was excited in a way about it.
Yeah.
And at this time, it feels like COVID has unfortunately fallen into the backdrop. And if you look at anywhere in California, that is not the conversation we need to be avoiding. So have these conversations so that when you are allowed to have the vaccine, that you know, maybe this is a good idea for me. And probably closer to the end of 2021 it's not my prediction, it is my prayer, so to speak, that things will be returning to a normal. And, you know, we might be masking for a lot longer. That is okay. As long as we can save as many lives as we possibly can, that would be, and any sort of discomfort to folks that are not getting hospitalized, that is my prayer for 2021.
Thanks for listening in, and please subscribe to the show to catch the next episode. You can follow us on Instagram to stay in touch and get all the updates. Our Instagram handle is vision.nari. That's vision.nari. If you know a visionary that I should feature on this podcast, write to me at thevisionarypodcast@gmail.com. That's thevisionarypodcast@gmail.com. This podcast is produced by Launchora, a storytelling and creative learning platform. Theme music is created by Diala Swain. She's a uniquely talented music producer from New Zealand. Do check out her music on SoundCloud or follow the link in the description. I'll see you guys soon with a new visionary. Have a great day.